It's time for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF's phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Call toll-free 1-800-662-7979. And for mobile phones, it's star 680. And now, Doug and Linda Lewis and Money Matters.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment in financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years, we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will? What's a living will? And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the Certified Financial Planner.
It's the Certified Financial Planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the Certified Financial Planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it? And if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments, home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds, bond mutual funds, equipment leasing partnerships, REITs, CDs, gold, annuities?
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out-of-towners, call us toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Investments through HBEC, Inc. Investment advice through Lewis Financial Management, HBEC, Inc., and Lewis Financial Management are not affiliated entities.
Good evening, North Carolina. This is Deborah Lewis. Welcome, Linda and Doug.
What a beautiful day, Deborah. Linda, what a day. Isn't this wonderful?
It's the time of year where you love being a North Carolinian.
You really do. The color is there. Everything is just fine.
It really was. Beautiful day. Well, should we go ahead and get started?
Let's do it.
Let's jump right in. I know we've got a lot to cover today.
We do.
There was a survey about how ready we are, or the readiness for retirement that most people feel, and it was basing it on workplace savings plans.
That, Deborah, was in the Investment News magazine from the October 3rd issue. It was really good news, and it's nice to have a success story every now and then, and that was a real success story that came out of a survey which was done nationally on retirement readiness.
I think it began with wondering whether or not there were people who were taking advantage of workplace savings plans and wondering how much of a real success of how many people had actually participated in those plans.
Very encouraging results. Overall, they found that working Americans are on track to replace 64% of their current income in retirement, a little bit short of what they're likely to need, but close enough that still most of them will be able to achieve secure retirement if they act now to raise their savings a little bit.
I think that was the real focal point, that we were assuming that we were going to define success as the ability to replace pre-retirement income for life.
That's right. That's right. The study, however, had very important, significant findings when you dove a little deeper into the results. And those significant findings were those that showed the differences between the best prepared Americans and those who were the least prepared for retirement. Very, very interesting results when you got into that aspect of the study.
What were some of those results?
Well, including Social Security, the best prepared quarter, 25% of working Americans, are on track to replace 100% of their pre-retirement income once they retire. That was really good. But the least prepared 25% is on track to replace only a little less than half, 46% of pre-retirement income, even including Social Security. So these people are at risk of severe stress, even poverty in their old age.
So they were saying that even including our Social Security income in that quarter of the population, they hadn't saved 50% of what their pre-retirement expenses were?
They're not going to make it. They
Wow.
will not make it,
Okay.
and they will possibly be at high risk for poverty, severe stress, were the terms in the results. And so several factors stood out on what to make. You know, how are the ones that are making it? What's going to, you know, what is their secret?
Okay.
And the first factor that stood out was they had a commitment to begin savings.
a commitment to begin savings, like just beginning savings, just opening up a savings account?
Well, simply put, the best prepared Americans not only have access to workplace savings plans, but they're taking full advantage of them. So the decision to begin saving is fundamental, and deciding to save. In other words, that's the number one factor. They have a commitment. We're going to make it.
Okay.
He and she are sitting down talking and saying, we're going to make it. We're going to go ahead and take advantage of our 401k plan, our pension plan, our pay yourself first plan, and we're going to stay with it. That was the first thing that stood out amongst the 25% that are going to fund well over 100%.
So while not everyone might have access to that, but the ones who do, the ones who are making that commitment to actually make that savings plan, putting it in action, are the ones who are able to keep up with saving enough?
Yes, they're going to be okay. That was the whole deal. They are going to be okay. And that's very encouraging because that is 25% of the working populace. Now, the other thing that stood out was the more that you save, the better off you are, which may seem like a base little truism, but it underscored the awesome compounding power of higher savings rates. Those best prepared Americans not only participate in a 401k, but they're contributing 10% or more of their income to some sort of retirement plan. The millions of people in this subset of the working population, the study found, are on track to replace 124% of their work income in retirement. Very encouraging.
124%, that means
20%.
24%, that's much better than
much
just
better.
That
means
46,
that
the
means,
bottom percentile.
That's right. That means in retirement, they will actually have more income by 24% than during their working years because of their determination to save and that 10% or more.
Wow.
But you know, the workplace savers who contributed between 4% and 10%, they were on track to only replace 84%. Still pretty good, but not 100% or 124%. But those who are contributing 4% or less of their income are running great risks of failure. That was the other statistic that came out.
Wow. Well, I'm guessing that the bottom line is that if you are someone who wants to know how to increase that percentage, you're probably going to be someone who seeks the advice of a financial planner, probably someone who wants to come and meet with someone like you, Doug and Linda, and get an objective opinion on how you can increase that.
That was the last thing that came out of the study. Professional financial advice, so said the results of the study, can raise retirement readiness. Overall, people without professional advice were the ones that were on track only to replace 61% of their income. But those who use a paid, fee-based financial advisor were on track to replace 82%. So clearly, advisors can provide valuable encouragement and guidance on investment decisions. And this was, of course, focused on fee-based planners, not commission salespeople.
Sounds so easy. Sounds so fundamental. Well, if you have any questions, please give us a call. The lines are open. It's 860-WPTF, 860-9783, or 800-662-7979.
You can get more information on Doug and Linda's website at lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
Alan, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
My mother is 74, and she has a majority of her investments now in certificates of deposit at different banks.
Right.
She does have some tax-free bonds and a few what I would call mutual funds in utility.
Right.
What kind of investments should she be making now, considering her age?
She's 74.
74.
How much does she have in CDs?
Probably $400,000.
$400,000 in CDs, and how much in her tax-free bonds?
Probably in all of her other investments, around $200,000 more.
Do you know what her living expenses are?
She lives well within her means and with a little Social Security she gets.
What's her health like?
Excellent.
She's a widow, Ellen?
Yes, she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, assuming, you know, God forbid she died tomorrow, then this might be fine. However,
assuming if she's still in good health, then she's really hurting her heirs. By the way, what about her home?
It's paid for.
How much is it worth?
Probably $80,000 to $100,000.
Well, one thing that jumps out right off the bat, knowing that she's a widow, if she's got $400 in CDs and $200 in munis and $100,000, that's $700,000. And if there's going to be any growth, even if there's only about a 3%, you know, when you're talking about those munis and utility funds and CDs, they're not real exciting. But even if that was the case with only 3%, at 15 years, she'd have over $1 million. So from the investment side, what I would do is I would have her in a diversified portfolio. I'd take the 4 and 2, the $600,000, and maybe break it into $50,000 unit sizes. So if you got $600,000 and you divide it by your $50,000 units, then she'd have 12 investment units, and I would spread it across 12 different mutual funds, quite frankly. And in each of those cases, I would go according to the past track record of the managers. She might be in some growth and income funds. She might be in some corporate bond funds. She could have a couple of government bond funds. She could have a large cap international fund, because she's able to live off of whatever portfolio she's in. So really what we're designing here is a portfolio that's going to let the estate grow the best for her heirs. You see what I'm saying?
I understand.
The phone number at the office is 919-872-7000. But then I would also do the estate plan simultaneously. And you could do that one of a couple of ways, but one way that comes to mind would be using the Section 664 trust. She has the very strong possibility of leaving an estate well over $1 million if she lives a little while. And so you could have all of this growth in the Section 664 trust with yourself. And how many other heirs are there besides yourself?
A total of four.
Well, you could have four beneficiaries, income beneficiaries from the trust, so that the trust would then pay out for the lifetime of those four.
She's of the age that grew up during the Depression.
Right.
How do you get them to understand that the money in the CDs is a losing proposition to her just because of inflation?
Well,
and out of into something maybe a little more risky, but still a very safe investment.
Well, it's not a matter of risky or safe. It's a matter of her living expenses being met. How much do you think she needs to live on?
She's living on about $15,000 a year.
$15,000. Divided by 600,000 is 2%, 2.5%. Well, we could increase her income to 30,000 a year without having any real risk, in my opinion, of depleting principal. Most senior citizens need to have education from an independent certified financial planner, someone who is impartial, not trying to sell them something, but someone who can educate, analyze, and decide what's best, and help them understand what's best. Very often when they see that their estate is going to be paying a couple $100,000 in taxes, that really starts to bother them. So it's an educational process. If she's open for education, then you should set up a meeting with a certified financial planner and let her go through a session of education.
We find this is a typical situation.
We have a lot of cases like that.
A lot of widows that, you know, their husbands accumulated, you know, over their lifetime, or maybe they both were, you know, had income, and or they inherited assets that have appreciated, and they don't always need all the income, but you want to, certainly, as Doug said, you want to make sure you're meeting her need, but also you want to look to the future, right, Doug?
Yeah, but I think Alan's question is, how do you explain that to her? He understands it very well. And the answer is still, you've got to get her in front of a planner. Usually the child cannot explain that to the mom and dad.
Right.
That's been our experience. The children that have brought them to us, usually it's a very different environment then, because the planner is able to speak directly, you know, with the parent.
So if you'd like to call the office, Alan, our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. And thank you so much for calling.
All right, thank you.
Take care now. All right, you're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis, and we're taking your calls at WPTF, 680 WPTF, at 860-9783, and out-of-towners, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979, and if you're in your car, it's star 680.
Well, you know, Linda, Deborah, I'm not sure that I would use the same advice today as I did during that call from the archives. I wouldn't use a Section 664 trust. I might use a revocable living trust, but I don't think I would use the Section 664 trust because the estate laws are different now. But the biggest advice of trying to get the parent in front of a certified financial planner who's fee-based, who can help educate the parent, that is still the most important advice that comes out of that call.
And it's something we see pretty much on a monthly basis, is the adult child bringing in the elderly or adult parent in, and it usually is exactly what they need.
It's very encouraging. You remember last week the woman who came to see us, she's been, of course, to see us in the past, and she came with her daughter who's in her 40s and so forth. And that's very comforting when both generations are right there, and the younger generation ultimately is going to inherit from the older generation, but the older generation is the one that needs more education.
And I would say it's a twofold inheritance. It's an inheritance maybe on the practical financial side, but in addition, it's an inheritance of an education,
a way
to handle your money, a way to handle your finances, a way to think through insurance planning, cash flow planning, and seeing what's been a success in their own parents' life.
Yes.
You know, so it really is a twofold inheritance. Well, give us a call on the open lines. It's 860-WPTF, 860-9783, 800-662-7979.
Well, Deborah, you mentioned retirement planning, and did you see any other articles that you wanted to comment on this past week?
Well, I really did. One that touched my heart and rings true just from talking to a lot of people on a daily basis who call in to the office from having listened to the radio show. There are many people who are singles and single again, whether that's being a divorcee or having a spouse pass away. But they are finding that they haven't saved enough, or they weren't encouraged to save enough, usually because of their own situation or having just felt like they could keep on waiting.
You know, Deborah, understanding money, especially when you're divorced, knowing how much it costs to live, understanding how much you're going to need right down to the penny. That's what a lot of the financial planning divorce coaches are saying. And I thoroughly agree with that. You know, right now there are 100 million singles who need to plan for their future.
That's a lot of people. And while getting back on your feet financially is an obvious part of resuming single life, it's probably one of the most overlooked.
Well, there is a study. Actually, it was Schwab that did the study that showed that 85% of married Americans have begun to save for retirement, with only about 60-some percent of singles putting away money for their later years. So it's just not the divorced who are failing to plan ahead. There's an increasing number of never married Americans and those who do marry that are staying single longer beforehand. And there is a huge shortage of planning for many older women also. Becoming single again is a natural outcome of just longer lifespans. You know, women live longer by 7 years on average. All told, there are nearly 100 million of these single people in the U.S., according to the Census Bureau figures, and that's a big need for planning.
That really is. I'm guessing, but nearly every financial planner would agree that the earlier the retirement planning starts, the easier it is to build a substantial nest egg. I'm remembering the article. It actually said, quote, "The longer you wait, the harder it is to catch up."
That's really true. When you start playing with compound numbers, you really see that dramatically. Anyway, for all those reasons, it's certainly vitally important that single people take control of their financial destinies as soon as they can.
When couples get married, they need to also not let divorce derail the retirement planning.
Yeah, because during divorce, the retirement accounts themselves by either spouse, they can be considered a marital asset and they can be divvied up, and that can really throw yourself for a loop. But what we always say, you know, Deborah, in our office is pay yourself first, pay yourself first. That's budget adjustments that should never come at the expense of saving for retirement. You need to get a hold of this pay yourself first mentality.
Knowing how you're spending every dollar that is coming in. And that retirement savings needs to be the first allocation of your money. As a single person, you don't want to be in a position where you'll have to sell long-term assets to pay for an emergency or to get an emergency loan.
Yeah, that's we see that when they come in. They want to know what should they do. I would say there are five tips that I could give singles. Number one, live below your means. Live below your means. Lifestyles can change dramatically on both sides of a divorce, but try to go ahead and put aside something. Don't spend everything that you're making. And then number two, save anywhere between 10% to 25% of your income for retirement. Don't underestimate the power of compound interest. It can be incredible, but try to save between 10 and 25% of your income for retirement. And the third tip I would say is maximize any type of retirement plan that your company has with a match or IRA contributions. The fourth thing that I would say is better get an emergency savings cushion. And then maybe fifth, check with a financial planner, what about long-term nursing care insurance? So for singles, planning seems to be a crucial issue that is being overlooked.
And the one thing I would add is that as those years go by, maybe you are saving 10% in your 20s, in your 30s and your 40s, it should be edging up to more and as much as you can as a percentage of your income, because hopefully your income has been able to go up. And as it has, you should be able to maximize that difference as the income goes up to also increase your savings amount.
That's very wise, Deborah. A lot of people use a fixed dollar amount on their pay yourself first or their savings. And then as their income goes up, they've just kept the dollar amount flat. But that should not be. It should be a percentage increase.
That's right. The expenses should stay flat. And as that income increases, that gives you more of an amount to save.
There you go. Well, you know, there was also an article on the other side of that story. And that was the article that I read. I don't know if you caught it, but it was an article on the 401k loan issue, which a lot of people are shooting themselves in the foot. And it was a real wake-up to the public who read this. Watch out for the 401k loans.
We recently had a client come into the office and ask us, they did not have a 401k, but they were wondering just for themselves, should I get a 401k so that I could specifically, if I needed to, borrow from it one day? So even if you're thinking about being someone who would, I guess they were an entrepreneur.
They were.
And they wanted to know if they should open up a 401k so that if they needed to, in case of emergency, to borrow against it. And the answer is still the same.
It's right.
Usually just much more trouble than it's worth. The likeliest to have a 401k loan are plan participants in their 40s. I thought that was interesting. With 10 to 20 years of tenure and earning between $40,000 and $60,000 a year.
Yeah, some people borrow, Deborah, Linda, they're borrowing from their 401k to buy a home, for home improvements, other people to consolidate their bills, to pay off loans, with the justification that the interest rate on a 401k loan is lower than others. Others borrow to pay for education or medical bills or weddings or divorces and cars. But all these reasons are the ones that are being promoted as why you can borrow from your 401k.
And usually a reason, I should say, that it's usually given is that you don't have to be afraid that you're going to lose access to that money that you've set aside in the retirement plan.
Right.
However, if you began thinking that it was going to be in the retirement plan, you know you're not losing any access to it anyway.
Yeah, it's a really weird type of logic, but that the advantages are being promoted as you can borrow from your 401k for, like you say, the reason that it's always going to be there because it's my money and all those sort of things. But, you know, there are some terrible, terrible things about borrowing from your 401k. Actually, I would say in my office, I continually tell clients, never borrow from your 401k. Under any situation, don't do it. And that's because your 401k interest payments that you're going to pay. Now, yes, you can borrow the money and you don't have to pay it back. You just have to pay the interest. But guess what? You're paying interest back with after-tax dollars. And then when you take your money out of that 401k later on, you're paying tax on that money that you pay double tax on that. That's stupid, number one. So that whole story of low interest rate is ridiculous. But, you know, it's even more serious than that, because one of the dangers of the 401k is, suppose you leave your job or your job leaves you, you're fired, laid off or whatever, then you have to pay back that loan within a short period of time. Usually it's 60 or 90 days. And guess what happens if that loan is outstanding when you lose your job and you're under 59 and a half years old?
I'm guessing you can add a 10% penalty to that.
You're exactly right. You have to pay back the income, you have to pay back the tax, and you have to pay a 10% tax on top of that, because that loan is considered income that you took out. So there are serious disadvantages. Borrowing can have major consequences. And the advantages of not taking the loan, in my opinion, are always going to outweigh. Look at some of the advantages.
Some of the advantages are going to be that, for instance, your money can keep growing.
Number one, absolutely. Your money for your retirement can keep growing.
Plus, if you take money out of your account, even temporarily, you'll miss out on a valuable valuable compounding. That, to me, is just the worst thing that can happen. The whole point in putting aside the money for the benefit of the compounding, not having invested with pre-tax dollars, and to lose that.
And compounding in a tax-free environment. I mean, all of that is gone once you've borrowed.
And you'll probably end up with a significantly smaller nest egg by the time you retire.
Yeah, so I was really glad to see the article hit so strong. I think even in today's News and Observer, I think Holly Nicholson had the same sort of advice to her readers. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Just sounds like, bottom line, the long-term benefits of not touching your retirement savings may far outweigh the short-term benefits of taking the loan. Well, give us a call on the open lines. That's 860-WPTF, 860-9783, 800-662-7979.
You can get more information on Doug and Linda's website at lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
And I believe we have another caller.
Well, George, how can I help you? This is Doug Lewis.
Doug, I have a question about mutual funds. What advantage, if any, is there to be had in buying a load mutual fund? And if there's no advantage, why are there so many of them?
The advantage to buying a no-load fund?
A load fund.
Oh, that's real simple. That's like saying, what's the advantage of going ahead and getting a real estate broker to sell my house for me when I can sell it myself? I thought you were going to ask the other question, what's the advantage of a no-load fund?
And well, there is either way. I'd like to know the advantages going either way.
All right. Well, first of all, there is no real advantage of buying a no-load fund or a load fund. There is no real difference between them. That's not the way you look at the issue. What you really want to know is, what's the performance and how has the fund with its managers done to make money over a length of time? And that's all you do. You just go ahead and you find if a particular set of managers can make more money for you than another set of managers, then go with that manager. And don't worry about if you had to go ahead and, you know, pay a few dollars to find a broker or a planner to put you into that fund. Don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Depends how long the money's going to be there, too. If you're going to pay a 5% load on a fund and you plan to keep your money there only 3 years, yeah, then that's wrong. On the other hand, if you're looking for but you shouldn't be in the mutual funds if you could be doing that anyway, because mutual funds are for long-term investing, at least 5 years. And over a five-year period, you'll find that 5% walks down to about 0.5% or 1%, and then over a 10-year period, it becomes an infinitesimal amount. The other thing is, most no-load funds have high fees inside the fund.
Yeah, right, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, nobody works for free.
So really, you've got to just forget about that and make the decision on what your needs are and the quality of the fund.
That's right. Look at the managers. Remember, a mutual fund is a group of men's minds who are going into the pit for you on Wall Street, and they're buying and selling stocks, and you're looking at their ability to select and their long-term performance record. Or if it's a bond fund, it's a group of men who are making their decisions on what bonds to buy and what bonds to sell and so forth. That's the whole key to this thing. They never see the load. That doesn't go to them. That goes to the broker or the planner, whoever it is that's putting the money with them.
Do you make recommendations to your clients on which funds to go into?
Yes, I do. Okay. Yes, I do. I'd rather not on the air because I don't like to step on anybody's feet.
Right.
But I track as many of the funds that I feel are good, and I guess every planner has their own special ones that they feel comfortable that have done well over a 5 or 10 or 20 year period or whatever.
And if there's anything we can do to help you with that, you can call our office here in Raleigh at 872-7000, and we'll see what we can do to help you.
Well, be in touch then.
All right. Thank you for calling, George.
Well, that was an interesting call. You know, George makes me think that probably a lot of the public is confused on this matter of load, no load, and so on, and how do you select mutual funds. There are barometers, baselines, tests, litmus tests that we should use in selecting a mutual fund. Yes, there are, but the test is not load or no load.
What are some of those tests?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that the stock market has such a thing called an index. It might be the S&P 500 index, the Dow Jones index, the MSCI EFI index, but there are indexes which are just a big giant basket of stocks that at the end of each day, all those prices are declared at the last trade and so forth. So if we're going to go into a mutual fund, the first thing we're doing is we're looking for diversification. Instead of buying one stock, we're going to buy a whole bunch of stocks with the same amount of money.
Okay.
That's the first reason we go into a fund. But now the question is, do we want to buy an index, which is better than buying a stock, or do we want to try and beat the index? And now we come to the manager. I personally am of the school that says I don't like buying index funds at all because indexes can be a disaster. The high and the low of the index in the recession or the meltdown of 08 was a 50% drop. That means people that had a $200,000 portfolio at the high ended up with $100,000. That's the index. So I don't want just that. I don't want to just be riding on an index. I want to see a manager who is competing with the index, first of all. And if the managers are not beating the index, then they're not part of the selection process.
Okay, so we want managers that are going to be actively managing the pool of stocks in this mutual fund.
And beating the index.
With an intention of beating the index.
And that their track record is that they have beat the index. That's the first thing.
Okay.
All right. Now, the second thing is their peers. You wouldn't want a small cap fund manager to be
judging himself against the S&P.
Right, right. Or you wouldn't want an international fund against the S&P because you're not comparing apples to apples.
Okay.
So after I have a manager or managers that have beat their appropriate index, then I want managers who have beat their peers in their category.
And their peers being other managers who are trying to outperform the same indexes?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So if we have a growth and income fund, a blue chip stock mutual fund.
Got it.
Large cap value fund.
Okay.
I want to be comparing that manager of that fund with his peers. And if I've got managers who are beating their peers and managers who are beating their indexes, then I don't care about the load. I care about putting the money into the hands of those managers.
Doesn't it ultimately reflect from one manager to the other much more accurately as to how well they're going to be an actively managed mutual fund or not?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, very good. Well, I know there are a lot of people who at the situation where you have had a spouse die.
Mm-hmm.
You are in a different space to begin with, and you often are the type of person who's calling the office and asking, you know, how do I even begin dealing with all of the issues that I have to deal with on the financial side? And there was an article that just underscored this so much, and it was saying there's a growing number of people who are wanting to work with these newly divorced or widowed because they... newly widowed or widowers who are, because they have different special issues.
That's right, Deborah. It's a special type of financial planner who is qualified to work with these widows. And there are a growing number of advisors that are eager to go ahead and work with them. There was one particular case, the woman, her husband had handled all the family's finances and investments. And then suddenly she was overwhelmed. And she didn't know what to do. The planner helped the woman locate the couple's accounts, file for Social Security survivor benefits, set up a new budget, and so forth. Well, that's one type of situation. Other types of situation are just the opposite. Some women who are widowed, I can think of one. She was in her early 50s. She was financially savvy as an executive. She had been very involved with her family's finances, and she didn't need any help locating accounts. But she also sort of seemed to be like in a fog, you know?
Yes, I do.
We'd have client meetings, and she was just in a fog. And so working with widows is very different from working with married couples or other clients, no matter how much financial knowledge the widow may have.
And I think a lot of that has to do that you have to be... You have to understand there's a timetable that they're going to need to go through, and they're not even going to know until they're in that situation as to how long or how quickly, how long it's going to take or how quickly they can move through that process.
Yeah. Widows never plan to be widowed.
Right.
And almost always in my experience, they wish they weren't.
And that's usually, I think, the most more serious of the situations. Widows want careful explanation. They want serious conversation. They want fast follow-up. I think these are all the real practical things that you've found through the years of working, you know, with recently widowed.
Yeah, there's a special mindset, and you have to be different as a financial planner working with the widowed. There's no doubt about that, and there's just a and some planners I know don't want to work with widows. The average age of some clients who are widowed is usually the mid to the upper 60s.
I see. What do you think are some of the things that they are completely unprepared for?
Well, on how to think about cash flow after the spouse dies, the cash flow needs are the crucial thing. And that's a budget. That's working with the expenses and everything. So you have to go ahead and start there. You work through their personal financial landscape. You identify threats. You increase their size of control over their own financial future. It's generally an educational process. And then you can have women who learn as they come out of this stage of their life to make the financial decisions that they've been avoiding or didn't realize they needed to make.
That seems like the most important part.
It is.
You know what it reminds me of is the your friend who is a financial planner in the D.C. area.
Yes.
And I've known her for at least half of my life. And I'm thinking of how she's spent most of her professional career helping and building a relationship with another professional. They even wrote a book together.
I give Alexandra Armstrong's book called,
On Your Own.
On Your Own. I give her a book to a lot of the widow clients that I meet or clients that have been widowed as their...
I remember when I was going through college and you even encouraged me to read it just because it was such a good learning tool. Well, if you have any questions, please give us a call on the open lines. It's 860-WPTF, 860-9783, or 800-662-7979.
You can get more information on Doug and Linda's website at lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
Let's take another caller.
Hi, Jeanette. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Hi. We're in our middle 50s, and we're about to make an appointment to either have a living trust or a will, and I don't know the difference between them. What would be the best for us?
Now, you say that you're getting ready to have a meeting with a financial planner?
Well, no, with a lawyer. We really need to have something set up because our adult kids really don't know what we have, and we just need to have the difference between living trust and a will.
Right. I can help you understand a little bit, but my first advice is don't meet with the attorney first. Meet with a certified financial planner that will educate you on how it ties together everything that you've got, and then go to the attorney next. It will cost you much less that way.
Is that right?
Yes, because so many times I see clients coming to me with unfunded living trust, and I ask them, why'd you do it? And they say, well, my attorney said I should do it. I say, well, wonderful. You realize you've got a toothless dog here. You created a trust, but it's not going to do a single bit of good for you because the benefits that you're expecting to get from it won't happen unless it's been funded. Well, the attorney never told me about funding them, and the attorney generally doesn't do the funding and so forth. So I would recommend that you meet with a fee-based certified financial planner. That's someone who you're going to pay a fee for. He's not going to try and sell you anything. But he will go ahead and look at your assets. There are many cases that, where you don't need a living trust and many cases that you do. There are many attorneys that don't like living trust because it cheats them out of fees later on. That's the view of some attorneys. And there are many who feel that it's the best thing there is.
Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Now, to give you some quick little down and dirty pieces of information so that I haven't failed to answer your question. A living trust is generally revocable, which means that you can change your mind anytime between now and the time you die. It has two sections to it generally. One section deals with the things that you want to happen during your lifetime. Those are called the living provisions. And then you have the testamentary provisions, or what you want to do happen at your death. And that's the same thing as a will. So it's got two provisions in there. Obviously, a will has nothing to do with your during your lifetime, but a living trust has two parts. It functions both during your lifetime and at your death. The IRS tells you that the revocable living trust has no taxable benefit to you whatsoever because you can change your mind. But the reason people very often want a revocable living trust is that it avoids the cost of probate at death, because if you put everything you own in the name of this revocable living trust while you're alive, then at the time you die, you personally didn't own anything. This trust owned everything, and so there's nothing to go through probate, and all of the fees that you would generally pay an attorney to probate your estate are avoided. That's one reason people like revocable living trust. Another reason people like revocable living trust is that at death, you know how there's very often a 9-month delay to go through the probate process?
Right.
Well, there's no delay. Anything that's in the trust can be distributed immediately according to the provisions in the trust. A third reason people like revocable living trust are confidentiality. At the time that you die, only the stuff that you own personally, in other words, only things that are not owned by this trust, are in the newspaper or available for public disclosure. Trust assets are never available to the public knowledge. Another reason that people like revocable living trust, probably one of the most important reasons that I recommend them for my senior citizens, is in the sake of incapacitation. If you don't die, but you get disabled, if you get paralyzed, you don't have to use a power of attorney or a person doesn't have to have a power of attorney to continue to administer your assets, to take things from your investments, to pay your medical bills, and so forth. Those are the reasons people want a revocable living trust. The differences between a revocable living trust and a will are basically the lifetime provisions. In other words, the what if I'm incapacitated? What if I'm disabled? There are obviously nothing like that in a will, because a will doesn't start happening until you die. But a revocable living trust starts happening today. But the other thing you need to understand is all people don't need revocable living trust, and all assets can't go into revocable living trust, such as your retirement accounts and your IRAs. And then there's the question of, do you want one revocable living trust for the two of y'all, or do you want separate ones? Really, you need to meet with a financial planner who can go over your assets. He's got to see everything. The attorney doesn't look at your assets. You need to understand that. When you meet with the attorney, you won't bring him copies of all your bank accounts and copies of your brokerage funds and all of that. But when you meet with the financial planner, yes, he wants to see everything that you own, so he can then get a picture and tell you whether he thinks it's worthwhile for you to pay the additional cost to have a revocable living trust produced.
Now, we've moved 19 times all over the country, we never know if we're going to move again.
That's another reason that many people like revocable living trust. That's a very good reason that people choose revocable living trust, is because the probate process at death, if you die tomorrow and you own things in different states, very often you've got to go through probate in each of those states if you own it in, outright. But if you own it in revocable living trust, you don't.
I see.
You see, each one of these issues is a question that really needs to be outlined much more in detail in front of a financial planner.
Sure.
Does that help you at all to get started?
That's great.
Some attorneys are excellent estate attorneys, and I know some really top estate planning attorneys. Others say they're estate attorneys, but they've got a little software package that you push a button and it prints out a will and fill in and makes them look like, but they really are not estate attorneys. And the financial planner can help you evaluate the competency of an attorney.
There's one brochure that I have that I'd be happy to send to you about estate planning. And if you'd like to call the office in Raleigh, it's 872-7000. That's USA 7000. I'll be happy to mail it to you.
Okay. That sounds just absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Bye.
Goodbye now.
Well, today there was an article, or this weekend's Wall Street Journal, there was an article talking about insurance, and it said, don't buy too much insurance, exclamation point. And the biggest thing that it was talking about or highlighting was firms are pushing everything from cancer coverage to tuition protection, and we need to check, or in the article, they check the latest policies and lay out what you really need.
Yeah, I saw that article and I really liked it because there were 10 types of insurance, which a whole bunch of stuff, which is, in my opinion, is just, I don't know, ridiculous. But they're being pushed by insurance agents, there's no doubt about it. There was juvenile or baby life insurance. There was tuition protection insurance. There was identity theft insurance. There was payment protection insurance if your credit card goes bad. And there was cancer insurance. And all of those were no-nos. You don't need insurance on your child. You don't need insurance for cancer. You don't need insurance for identity theft. All of those, the article was very much against, and I am very much against. And there was divorce insurance also, which was another nonsense one. But there were four types of insurance, three of which I certainly agree with that you should have. Number one, there was term life insurance, yes, you should have that. That's a good one. Disability insurance, possibly. Umbrella liability coverage insurance, definitely. And earthquake and flood insurance. And so I really like the article warning people against all the policies that are being pushed out there, which are nonsense. Who's waiting for their baby to die so they need insurance for their child's death?
All right, let's take Mary's call.
Mary, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
If you have had different employers and you have money that you can get in a lump sum from your pension plan and
right.
put in your 401k, can you just put that directly in there without any tax ramifications? How does that work?
How old are you, Mary?
50.
All right. How much is in the pension plan of the previous employer?
It's about $50-some thousand.
It was fully funded by the employer?
Correct.
All right. So you're 100% vested. It's your money?
Right.
In the old plan.
Right.
If the 401k lets you, you can roll it from the old pension into your present 401k. The IRS lets you.
All right.
However, I don't let you. I think that's a stupid thing to do.
Okay. Right?
So let me tell you what I think you should do.
Okay.
Number one, you should take it away from the old employer. Number two, do not put it into the new employer. What you want to do, in my opinion, is you want to set up an IRA rollover account and roll it from the old pension into an IRA rollover account.
Mm-hmm.
Because that will give you more flexibility, more control, less constraints, and more investment selections. You can go into basically any in mutual funds you want in the United States and many, many partnerships. You've got lots of choices where if you just go straight into your present 401k plan, you've only got the choices they've got.
You're right. Limited.
You see what I mean?
The prices that they offer. Uh-huh.
Furthermore, you can't access it later on if you need to get to it for an emergency.
I see. Okay.
What's the size of the rest of your investment portfolio, Mary?
About $250,000.
And is that in personal money?
Personal.
All right. If you've got $250,000 over there, then you might pick two or three different funds once you roll this to an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe pick maybe three 15,000s or two 25s for this money to be rolled into.
Okay.
And it should be part of an overall asset allocation model. The overall asset allocation model should encompass both the 250 and this 50. So you've got a balance between debt funds and equity funds, balanced funds, growth and income funds, and so forth.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, Mary. And if we can be of further assistance to you, just call us at the office at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Well, that's all the money matters we have time for today. So we want to thank all our listeners for joining us. And for any other questions you may have, call my office during the week and we'll set up an appointment to meet with you personally. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. And we'll be back next week on this same station at the same time. In the meantime, have a great week. And remember, your money matters because your financial future is at stake.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.
You can get more information on Doug and Linda's website at lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.